Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning, August 16th, 52 degrees currently here in Old Town Park City. And we've got in the Heber Valley reporting also 54 degrees. On the phone with us with an forecast from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Good morning, Cesar.
Good morning, Leslie. We continue to start off the morning a little bit on the cool side, as we just saw temperatures still ranging around some of the 50s for us. But we do expect to warm up. We're going to see a high of 87. Unfortunately, we will still have smoke hanging around for us throughout today and tonight. We'll see a low of 62. Tomorrow, we'll still see plenty of warm air still making its way in again before a storm system starts to make its way in for us. We expect to see patchy smoke still hanging around. And again, a high of 86, then storm chances for us around the afternoon and evening hours. As we go into Tuesday night, we start to see that some showers linger, but again, not too much of activity going into the overnight hours. We'll see a low of 57. Wednesday, we expect to see better storm chances going around, showers also hanging around, a high of 68, so we see a nice little cool down for us, and we'll expect to see that the showers and rain continue for us going into Wednesday night. We'll see a low of 49. Going into Thursday, we still see some showers hanging around, some thunderstorms also for us, as we have a high of 64. Again, a cooler day thanks to all of the colder air that has sparked up some of these storms making its way in also with this low pressure system. And going into Thursday, we expect to see some chance showers still hanging around for the evening into some of the later night hours. Again, a low 49 for us, much cooler once again. Going into Friday, we're expecting to see a little bit less storm chances, and we'll see a high of 69, so we do have a nice little break in between for us as we go about the day. And going into Friday night, we'll still see some afternoon showers still hanging around, partly cloudy skies with a low of 49. Going into Saturday, we're expecting to see that we still have another little system making its way in, which means we have the possibility of thunderstorms once again, but throughout the morning hours, we'll see mostly sunny skies with a high of 72. Going to Saturday night, those showers and thunderstorms hang around for a little bit towards the afternoon and evening hours, and by the time we get to our overnight low, we'll see a low of 50. Going into Sunday, we can expect to see a chance, very slight chance of showers, just because of some of that residual moisture hanging around, but overall, we'll still be sunny and we'll be warm with a high of 76 for us. From the ABC Forecast Center, I'm meteorologist Cesar Cornejo. Over to you, Leslie.
Okay, thanks, Cesar. It's 8:09. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. And what would be day number one of the KPCW Summer Pledge Drive has just been postponed. In the studio with me, I've got station manager Renee Bodley Miller. So what's up?
Good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, normally the phones would be ringing and the station would be abuzz with activity and lots of volunteers and the entire staff here. And we made the decision yesterday when we heard from the firefighters at the Parley's Canyon fire that the evacuation order would be going through Monday. And we just knew that there was no way that we could conduct a pledge drive. The number one priority for this station is public safety. And watching the Parley's Canyon fire, providing real-time updates to our listeners and all those people who have been displaced by this fire, there was no way we would conduct a fundraiser at the same time. So huddled with our board chairman, Roger Goldman, some board members, the staff, and we all agreed that we just needed to hit the pause button on fundraising for now. Hopefully we can kick things into gear tomorrow, Leslie, but as long as people are out of their homes, we're not going to be doing a pledge drive. And we're watching this closely. You know, for the past 48 hours, we have been doing updates on this fire almost every hour, except for the overnight hours when things have calmed down. So, speaking of calming down, one of our volunteer engineers, Roger Crawford, who lives in the Timberline area, just sent me some information. He sent me a picture from the area, from the Lambs Canyon, looking back up towards the fire scene. And he said he did not see any flames, but several areas of low-laying smoke. No wind at this point, which is great news. As long as things are calm, they have a better chance of fighting that fire. And then he said he saw three trucks from Rocky Mountain Hotshots at the Parley Summit exit and several trucks from the power company working on lines in the burnt area near where that fire started. So hopefully we can continue to give you good news like this about the fire. You know, we heard that that cold front might be bringing some winds that could kick up some flames. Again, the biggest concern from those firefighters was if those canyon winds start and embers start flying with that fire less than a mile away from the nearest structures, excuse me, you know, that could be a worst case scenario. So safety first, fundraising comes after that.
Okay. So, yeah, stay tuned, Pledge fans, because it's not canceled, it's just postponed at this point. Because of that, really didn't have a local, we had hoped that we were going to have the local news team in here just to talk about the accolades over the last 6 months, but we do hope to bring them back again later in the week to talk more about that. We've got some great news from Sean Higgins, of course, winning a multitude of awards there at the Society for Professional Journalists this year. We've got a couple of new faces on the news team, Ben Lassiter, Michelle Dinenern, so we'd love to introduce those folks to you as well. Coming up, though, we are scheduled to get an update from what is now a Type 2 management incident team. They kind of took over overnight, going from a Type 3 to a Type 2, meaning that we're going to be able to bring some more personnel and resources to fight this fire. As we heard from Caesar, again, looking for another hot, dry, smoky day today and tonight, and hopefully getting some rain in here Tuesday night on into Wednesday and Thursday. But as we know, with cold fronts, what that means is usually gusty winds that affect that come with that front. So gonna really check in to see what's happening with that tomorrow. Again, hoping to speak with Jesse Bender or her replacement this morning in just a few minutes. I'm going to get to a local news story. We'll be back with Renee, also scheduled to speak with Dana Jones with the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District as well this hour. But Saturday, a beautiful day with blue skies and fresh air, then took a sudden turn for the worse as a brush fire grew into engulfed 600 acres of the Wasatch Back, threatening the homes of thousands. Those who were ordered to leave had a moment's notice to grab essential belongings, uncertain if they would be able to return. KPCW's Ben Lassiter yesterday spoke with some of those evacuees.
As the Parley's Canyon fire spread at breakneck speed Saturday, residents of Summit Park, Timberline, and Pinebrook scrambled to get out of harm's way. Warnings started coming in around 2 p.m. Within 2 hours, sheriff's deputies were knocking on Pinebrook doors, telling people to leave the area. The short notice left little time to pack essentials. That meant different things to different people. Residents reported grabbing documents, pet supplies, electronics, and skis. One 7-year-old filled 4 backpacks with stuffed animals. Rita Baden of Summit Park didn't have a car to evacuate. She got a ride to a Park City shelter from a police officer and spoke to KPCW shortly after.
I wasn't able to get either my medication, so I have 2 kittens. And he said we didn't have time, so I'm here frightened for them. My house. It's not an easy time.
A firefighter went to her house and managed to retrieve one of the 2 cats and photographs of her late husband. In Pinebrook, the DeRop family are no strangers to natural disaster, having lived near the South Florida coast. They said this was the closest they'd come to real danger. On the way out, they made time to grab valuables of their own and some out of the houses of neighbors who were out of town. Magnus DeRop says it got hectic.
We were going down just every road trying to check out the fire, and my dad kept saying, if we see it come over the ridge, we're packing up and we're going. But then it just fell into chaos. My mom and dad just started to go crazy. One's trying to help the neighbors, one's just trying to get out of here, and then we ended up at our grandparents' house.
The Lawler family of Salt Lake City got stuck in the Summit Park area while visiting friends. They wound up sleeping in a parking lot on an air mattress in their car. Mason Lawler says it wasn't so bad. His 2-month-old daughter, Evelyn's already a professional camper.
We couldn't drive to Salt Lake on the 80 at the time, so we were just like, I guess let's just find a park that we can hang out at. We're pretty set up for it. It wasn't bad at all. We actually have a beautiful little view out the back. We were looking for a place to sleep, and I thought, nobody's going to get mad at us for sleeping in a park during an evacuation. I was just happy the cops didn't come mess with us or anything, because it's like, where are we supposed to go?
After a night staying with a friend in Heber City, the Mills of Pine Brook were able to return to their house for belongings Sunday morning. But the sheriff's deputy who let them pass through the neighborhood traffic stop gave them a warning.
They said, well, if you need to go get some dog food or feed your dogs, you can go up for about 20 minutes, half an hour, but I need to keep your driver's license so we know where you are. I said, that's fine. I give the driver's license. And by the way, if something happens, we're not going up to get you. I said, well, we live a nice long night. We can live with that. So here we are. We're hoping the thing ends today.
All in all, many evacuees were in good spirits Sunday. Officials reported favorable, light wind conditions and a smaller burn area than what was first reported Saturday. Many said they were relieved and grateful. Evacuees said they appreciated the outpouring of support from the community and thanked firefighters from Park City, Salt Lake, and beyond for keeping their homes safe. Ken and Julie Himmler of Pine Brook said seeing the helicopters, airplanes, engines, and people attacking the blaze gave them peace of mind.
I'm not too worried about it. These guys will do their job, and there's no plumes going up right now, so I'm not really too worried about it. I know it could pick up, but it is what it is.
I have a profound amount of gratitude for our firefighters, that's for sure.
Without a doubt. Working. Those guys are kicking butt.
There's some hardworking people. Thank God for them.
Yeah, right, very grateful for them.
Yeah.
At the close of the weekend, Pine Brook and Summit Park residents still couldn't go home. One official said the evacuation could lift Tuesday morning. But at least, the fire still hadn't gotten too close to any buildings. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Well, fire crews are back on the job this morning, and on the phone with an update, I have the public information officer on scene today, Jesse Bender. Good morning, Jesse. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you.
The difference between yesterday and today is that we've got a new management team, what's called a Type 2. So how will things change?
Well, mostly we bring more capacity to support the fire crews and the work that they're doing on the ground, as well as to take a lot of the pressure off of the local units. So this fire did start on lands managed by Utah DNR Forestry Fire and State Lands, and it burned on to Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest lands. And so we are working with both of those entities to help alleviate some of the work that comes with a fire of this size.
All right. So what's the latest? We heard late last night that the Parley's Canyon fire is now at 10% containment.
It is. We're at 10% contained and 539 acres. More accurate mapping reduced our total acreage considerably.
Yeah, and where is that containment located?
Mostly along the interstate. I-80 is where we've had the best success so far. That's right where the fire started. And so it's very common that the first bits of containment would come near the origin of the fire. But additionally, the highway makes such a good containment line naturally, and so it's easy for firefighters to start working from there where they've got great access and then start working around the sides of the perimeter.
Okay. My understanding is that you had a briefing this morning, so what's the plan for today?
The plan for today is basically continuing the work that was done yesterday, so working along the interstate still. There is still some work to be done there, and then continuing up each side from there, so both the west and the east sides of the fire. Primary concern is the east side, since that is the direction that the majority of the private property and homes are in, and so that's going to be our highest priority edge of the perimeter, and then we'll continue to work around both sides. We have crews, engines, helicopters, likely we'll have water scoopers again today. Additionally, Rocky Mountain Power is out there replacing power poles and other equipment so that they can restore power to the Summit Peak area.
Okay.
Or excuse me, Summit Park.
Okay, so power has been out at Summit Park all of this time, huh?
It has, yes. And the power crews were out even until late last night working to try and restore that.
All right. So now do crews bivouac out overnight, or do they all come in for the night? How does that work?
Well, we have some of both right now. Some of the crews are coming down into Park City to the ice arena facilities where the fire camp is located and are staying here. But some are scattered about with around the fire area as well. Part of our COVID mitigation activities include trying to keep too many people from gathering up in one place, like the fire camp. So we're allowing crews to sleep in designated areas around the fire area to spread out in that regard.
Okay. Now, has the fire reached any closer to the homes? I mean, I've heard two different numbers, anywhere from a half mile to three quarters of a mile away.
Oh, boy, I am not sure what an exact measurement from the fire perimeter to the homes is. They are still considered threatened because of the fact that the fire is uncontained. However, that threat is reducing by the moment, especially as we look at more favorable weather conditions coming in the next couple of days. There's a increased chance of precipitation, and the Weather Service is even saying up to an inch of rain potentially. So that'll definitely give us a lot of advantage. It creates some other issues. That much rain coming immediately after a fire can produce a lot of mudslides and such. And so we will have concerns for flooding and runoff, but it will help in the fire suppression.
Yeah, sure. And what we also hear, though, with any incoming storm is that we usually see gusty winds before that front arrives. Any concerns about that?
Yes, we definitely have concerns for the potential for increased winds. While it doesn't sound like this will be a heavy lightning storm, anytime we have winds, that's a concern. So we're hoping to make as much progress today before those winds get here as possible to help minimize the potential impact of those winds.
So any updates when those who have been evacuated can go home?
We're working closely with Summit County Sheriff's Office to make that determination together. So the official word will likely come from the sheriff first, and then the incident management team will be able to share that also. But we expect that they will make that announcement as soon as it's possible. Right now they're saying no earlier than tomorrow. One, we want to get power restored. Two, we want to secure as much of that eastern edge of the perimeter as possible so that we feel confident we won't have to re-evacuate any homeowners.
Sure. And do we have a total count of evacuees or households? I mean, we're hearing 6,000 to 8,000 homes, or are we talking people?
My understanding is that it is around 5,000 homes. That may change as more accurate assessments occur even throughout the day. Sometimes it's hard to tell for sure how many people are or how many homes are within a given area. And so it's definitely an estimate at this time.
Yeah, and with the more resources now being brought to the fire, does that mean that we would see regular media updates during the days rather than kind of closed off to the media, these interagency briefings?
We actually have an NCWEB website set up now, and so hopefully that helps too as far as sharing information. This morning's update has already been posted there. Maps are in development, and so those are some of the examples of capacity that a larger incident management structure brings with it so that it's not relying on the local personnel who are probably producing maps for multiple fires in the area. We can focus just on this fire and help produce those same products just a little more quickly. So the INSA website is set up. You can find that under Parley's Canyon Fire. And again, that morning update with basically the information that we've already shared this morning is there. The one additional piece is that the Uinta Wasatch Cache National Forest is enacting an area closure. It is not complete yet, but it will be sometime today.
Okay, so what's the website though? I mean, I just searched and I don't see it. I mean,
it's INCWEB, INCIWEB, as an incident website, and it has large fires across the country and is the kind of widely recognized national location for fire information. So there will be a post on Utah Fire Info to say that the INSA website is updated and available for folks. But that will be our primary location for information. And then also the Utah Fire Info Facebook and Twitter sites.
Hi, Jesse. This is Renee Miller. Got a couple questions for you. First, just clarification on that website, ncweb.gov?
It's actually ncweb.n, as in Nancy, wcg.gov.
ncweb.nwcg.gov. Okay, we'll put a link on that on our website, kpcw.org, for our listeners so they can link over.
Thank you.
Quick question for you. What kind of terrain are you guys in? We heard yesterday from firefighters that they were in a bowl area they found especially challenging and that they were keeping the fire from going over a ridge that separated Summit Park Subdivision from the fire.
The terrain varies over the perimeter of the fire. So, like, near the interstate, it's the slope. Excuse me, I got tongue-tied saying that. The slope isn't as steep. But as it goes up the mountain, it definitely gets steeper. So firefighters are dealing with a variety of terrain and a variety of vegetation, too. Again, it's different near the interstate than it is higher up on the hill where there's more timber. And down lower by the interstate, it's mostly grass and brush.
Yeah.
And so that adds complexity, too, to have the shifting fuel types. The good news about it is that there's less timber. And that's one of the reasons why we've had so much success, not necessarily with containment figures right now, but in general with limiting the spread of the fire, because it's easier to suppress in that light grass and sage and brush than it is in the timber.
Were you able to keep the fire from going over that ridge? Is it still on the other side from the subdivision?
Not knowing exactly which ridge would have been referenced, it's hard for me to say for sure yes or no. The map that we will have out later shows some of the terrain. So especially for residents, that'll be really helpful to see and have that that familiarity with where the fire is in relation to their property and can kind of bring some of that personal awareness to it.
And in anticipation of having rain tomorrow even, in a forecast of up to an inch of rain, we've all heard the stories about rain on burn scars in creating some mudslides or landslides. Right now, where the terrain is, would that create a risk for any homes, or are we still in sort of a forest area where if there were to be a mudslide, it wouldn't hit any structures?
I'm not aware of any structures that could immediately impact, I'm still getting my awareness of the vicinity too and where the homes are in relation to all of the fire. So I think it's unlikely, but I'm not 100% certain on that. Where it would be a high likelihood of impact is on that interstate area. Ooh. Because as that rain comes downhill, naturally that's going to bring it right to the interstate. And so that'll be a concern depending on, again, if we really get an inch, that could be that biggest impact is to roadways. And that's, you know, for the public as well as for firefighters and for their ability to access the area. And then concerns over the municipal watershed as part of that also.
And speaking of the highway, are you guys going to have some eastbound lanes shut down for firefighting vehicles and firefighter safety today?
Yes, there still will be lane restrictions. We're hoping that will be down to just one closed lane today. But we do want to continue to provide that additional space so that firefighters can work safely in the area.
In containment numbers, we heard that containment numbers come in at the end of the day after the crews who have been on the front lines of the fires come down and talk about what they've done. Do you think we'll see any updates on containment throughout the day, or should we just wait till this evening?
We only update containment once a day, and the biggest reason for that is that it could be a moving target throughout the day on wildland fires. So that is nationally the expectation, that we update it once a day and provide a snapshot in time, essentially, rather than that potentially moving target throughout the day. So yes, we will update it again tonight. Given the success that fire crews had yesterday, given the outlook for today, I'm very optimistic that we'll see an increase in that person containment, but it's, of course, dependent on what happens. If there's additional growth, then it could end up even going down. But I'm optimistic that we're going to have a good day out there and be able to increase that tonight.
Okay. Hey, Jesse Bender, she's the public information officer on site of the Parleys Canyon Fire. We appreciate your time this morning. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for helping share this information. We're happy to be here and provide any help that you or the locals need.
Okay. Again, that Jesse Bender with the Parleys Canyon Fire. Well, the KPCW news team and station management here working very closely with the ground response team, our city and county leaders, and other emergency personnel to provide updates in real time on that Parleys Canyon fire. And given those circumstances, we're going to continue to provide that news coverage through the day and have postponed the start of our annual summer pledge drive.
That's right, Leslie. And today we had six different groups coming in. You know, our pledge drive, we ask a nonprofit to host an hour, and they find a for-profit partner to come in with them. There's months and months of planning that go into a pledge drive. So to postpone today's activities and to specifically ask these six groups to change their schedules, we know that's a big ask, and we are very grateful to them for understanding. I just want to give them a shout out. People's Health Clinic, Flanagan's, is their sponsor. Habitat for Humanity, The Ridge, is their sponsor. Park City Seniors, Identity Properties, and Park City Lodging, we're coming in with them. Park City Angels, sponsored by Pando. Park City Institute, sponsored by Zions Wealth Management. And One Revolution, that's Chris Waddell's nonprofit, sponsored by Julie Hopkins Real Estate. Thank you to those six groups. If you are listening today and anticipating making a donation to support not only KPCW Radio, but one of those nonprofits, stand by. Have your dialing fingers ready to go. We'll let you know when we reschedule them. Leslie, we're kind of hoping that maybe we can move everybody to Friday. We do four-day pledge drives, so everybody gets a break on Friday. And this time we've decided if we can start on Tuesday and push the Monday to Friday. Now, of course, we just heard from Jesse, if this evacuation order is still in effect tomorrow, then we may make a decision to postpone yet another day. So thank you, everyone, for your patience and understanding. Obviously, our priority is getting the information out about this fire and helping people who've been displaced as a result of that evacuation order. And we'll do fundraising some other time.
Okay. Let's get back to some local news. Visits by KPCW to six apartments at the Elk Meadows complex on Kilby Road and interviews with tenants who have lived there as long as 18 years reveal poor health and safety conditions. KPCW's Michelle Deininger reports.
This week, KPCW interviewed more than a dozen current and former tenants of Elk Meadows, which is the white apartment complex between I-80 and Pinebrook. It's classified as affordable housing, with rents calculated based on a percentage of tenants' income. Tenants open their doors to allow photographs of their homes because they say their living conditions are unacceptable and their apartment manager and property owner won't fix what's broken or falling apart. After years of decline coupled with steady rent increases, they say they're at their wits' end. KPCW has verified tenant names and addresses as well as their leases and eviction notices, but it's not identifying them in order to protect their privacy. One family pays $1,437 a month in rent for a two-bedroom unit after a recent increase of $56 a month. But their refrigerator does not work consistently. The fan on their stove is broken. The bathtub and shower in their only bathroom were recently removed, they believe, to fix water damage. More than a week later, a replacement arrived but isn't completely installed yet. Their apartment is neat and tidy and filled with kids' toys and other necessities of life, but there's visible mold on the walls. Window frames are rotted and crumbling and have holes open to the outside. The windows, one of which is right next to the baby's crib, have no screens or blinds. The apartment has cockroaches. As he gave a tour, 16-year-old Ricardo, the family's eldest son, said their apartment is in better shape than their friends' units.
Up here, water clogged up and it was making like a huge bubble. And then it popped one day. We told the managers about it. They said, again, it's not important right now. We'll deal with it later. They never did, so my dad got a piece of wood, and he painted over it, he covered everything.
Yeah.
I feel like we're a little better because of my dad fixing all the problems himself. Because he works in construction and painting, so he knows how to do it. But other people, they really don't know what to do. We have offered help to them.
Another family was evicted 2 months ago after 18 years in their apartment. Before moving, they cooked in a crock pot for 2 months because both their stove and oven were broken. Their rent had increased to $1,656 per month for a three-bedroom. Their eviction notice said they failed to report water damage and moisture issues. but they said they did, and instead of repairs, they got the eviction notice, which a Park City social worker told KPCW is standard practice there. Another five-year resident of the complex pays $14.37 a month for a two-bedroom. His oven is broken, and only one stove burner works. The appliance is rusted, with no knobs for the burners and the oven handle falling off. His bathroom floor is spongy, moisture apparently accumulating under the flooring. Mold spreads up from where the flooring and walls meet. Plumbing lines behind the toilet are rusted and decayed. A mother of two who's lived there 8 years pays $14.36 monthly for a two-bedroom, but does not have a copy of her lease. Her apartment has broken interior doors, doorknobs, and a shattered mirror cabinet in her bathroom. She said through a translator she's repeatedly requested repairs.
She was like every three times a week or something like that. Everyone's worried, but they still ask. Because at their report, then the third day, they come with the eviction notice.
Elk Meadows is owned by Security Properties, a $5.5 billion Seattle company that owns more than 25,000 multi-housing units across the country. Jody Nolander, its regional director, said by email that Security Properties has invested more than $800,000 in Elk Meadows since buying it 3 years ago. She said the company would like to repair the broken items in the units KPCW visited and that tenants should submit a request for repairs. Adults interviewed work as house and hotel cleaners, painters, and laborers. None speak English. All expressed confusion and stress as they described efforts to get things fixed and communicate with the on-site manager, who does not speak Spanish or offer translation. Tenants' children help translate, but the complex's management office closes before tenants get home from work.
Theo doesn't like how the manager, I guess, treats this place. She doesn't really care when we report the damages. ¿Qué más que?
No me gusta cómo ella atiende. Yo apenas solté arreglar mi estufa porque ella me dijo que ella no puede arreglar mi estufa.
Oh, so she recently fixed the stove because the manager has denied fixing it or sending someone in to fix it. Dicen cuando she just gets mad.
Que ya le dijo que ya no tiene que andar yendo a cada lado.
That can't be going every single time. She already knows about the problem. She just gets mad.
All the windows in the units KPCW visited had the crumbling frames, rotted buckling seals, and holes open to the outside in their metal frames. They're single pane and most had no coverings. Tenants pay for their own heating in the winter. After inspecting Elk Meadows last year and denying its owners a business license due to extensive fire, health, and safety code violations, Summit County inspectors returned this week to check on repairs Security Properties told the county it would make. A crew of inspectors entered 106 units. Helen Strawn with the Summit County Attorney's Office said inspections went well, but she did not know whether Elk Meadows had passed its inspection or what the next steps would be. County officials declined further comment. Every tenant KPCW spoke to said they like the Elk Meadows community and the apartment's proximity to schools, stores, and bus lines. They don't want to move, but can hardly bear the conditions.
I would like for them to tear down the whole apartments and reconstruct all of them. They're all messy. They don't take care of the maintenance issues. It's hard to live in.
Ricardo knows Elk Meadows well. He's lived there since he was 5 years old. Michelle Deininger, KPCW News.
Studio now with an update from the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District. I have Director Dana Jones. Good morning, Dana.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, glad you're here. So the basically it's the end of summer and the start of fall programming this week. What do people need to know?
You know, we're wrapping up our summer camps this week, which have been hugely popular this year. And we'll be starting fall soccer here. And there are hundreds of kids registered for fall soccer. And it's, in fact, our office is filled with soccer balls right now. So it's kind of interesting to wander around there. But so, folks, if you want to get your kids in some of our programs, check out our website. We have some really amazing things going on in the fall also.
Okay. What about coaches? Do you need coaches for the youth soccer?
You know, our youth soccer coaches are pretty much all volunteer, and I believe we're doing pretty well this year. We've, I think, and I don't know if it has anything to do with the pandemic and people being indoors, but this year, more people seem to be coming out and volunteering to do that. So I think it's a good thing.
Okay. Let's see. This Friday, it's the Downhill and Grill event being held at Trailside Bike Park and the last movie in the park. What are the details of that?
You know, the Downhill and Grill is our is an annual event for us. You can come on by, have some barbecue, listen to some music. And, you know, if you haven't checked out our bike park, make sure you do that. We've got some really cool things in store for the bike park. We're installing a new jump line. There's going to be some added amenities at the bike park that you really can't find anywhere else in the area. So kind of stay tuned for that. We should be having our contractors start on that before too long.
Okay. So what's the deal then? People bring their own barbecue?
No, we will be barbecuing for people. So you can come on by and have some food and listen to some music and get on your bike, or don't. Just come on out, enjoy it, because that evening we'll also be having a movie in the park. You can set up your lawn chairs and watch a movie.
Okay. Let's see. So it starts when?
That is a good question. That would be at 5 p.m.
Okay. And the cost?
It is free.
Okay.
Come on by and enjoy the evening.
And do you know what film you're showing?
I am not sure this week. We will have to check on the website for that.
Okay. Let's see. Basin Rec also partnering with the Summit County Arts Council to do what?
That sounds like a really cool event. This will be my first one, but it is the Art on the Trails event. And it starts at Copper Moose. It's going to run on August 28th from 2 to 6 p.m. And like you mentioned, we are partnering with the Arts Council. So it is a mile-long walk along the trail. It will be done in groups. So you need to kind of go on the website, register in advance for what time you would like the tour. It is free, but you can enjoy a number of different arts and performances along the trail. And it should be a great event. And it's a really good partnership.
Okay. And again, that's also free.
It is.
Yeah. All right. And then coming up this afternoon, you've got a retreat being held, started at 4 o'clock, and this just basically looking at future planning for the district?
Yes. Although, because of the fire and the evacuations, I think about half of our board members have been evacuated, so we did decide to postpone the retreat. We kind of made that decision yesterday. We just didn't want people to have to worry about that, along with trying to worry about whether their homes were safe and that kind of thing. So we have postponed that. We're going to be having that next month instead. But there are a lot of future things happening in Basin Rec that are just really exciting right now. We've got a number of ideas for RAP grants that are going to be coming up. We're going to be doing some really cool work at Willow Creek. We're planning on doing some rehab of the Willow Creek Pond, which it really needs it. And we're also looking at replacing the playgrounds there, because they're about up to their life. And we have some really cool ideas of actually putting in an all-inclusive playground. So it'll be ADA friendly. And we want it to be reflective of some of the mining history in the area. So in my mind, we're going to create a destination playground. You know, when they say, what are the top 10 things to do in Park City? One of them is going to be visit our playground at Willow Creek.
Okay. And what are some of the other big picture topics that you're looking at in the future here?
You know, for us also, we are looking at doing some improvements at Run Amok. That is one of our most popular areas. Maybe some improvements to the parking lot, expand the parking lot. We'd like to put in a permanent restroom at that parking lot, rather than the porta potties that are there now. I think that's being as that is our most popular area, it just really makes sense to make those improvements.
The dog park's the most popular area?
It is. That is where we get the most people, right there at that trailhead.
Hard to believe. I mean, just given all the soccer that happens at Willow Creek. The
most popular trailhead.
Okay.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
You know, I did want to kind of put out a shout out for our upcoming 8th annual Swing for Sports golf tournament. That is on September 22nd, so you might want to think about registering a team there. It's really an important fundraiser, because we use that money for our scholarship program. And this year, we had to expand it and pull money from other places, because there were so many more people that were requesting scholarships. We did not want to turn down anyone that came to us and was in need to be able to come to our camp. So come on out and golf with us on September 22nd.
Okay, details again on the website.
That is correct.
Okay, Dana, thanks. See you next month.
Thank you.
Dana Jones is the director, district director of the Snyderville Basin Recreation District. You're listening to Local News Hour here on KPCW. Again, a quick update with regard to the Parley's Canyon fire. Right now, 10% contained, reduced once again as they did some infrared flying over the area last night, down to 539 acres burned. That containment is mostly along Interstate 80 where the fire started. As we heard from Jesse Bender, the PIO on site, it's usually containment happens from the origin of the fire first. The highway making a great containment line there. She says that they'll continue to do work that was done yesterday with the low winds, making for some favorable firefighting conditions. They're continuing up each side, both east and west. Again, the most pressing issue, again, is that eastern boundary. Just over the ridge there are where homes and structures begin. Also, very high concern is the protecting the municipal watershed. Closures and evacuations will be continually evaluated to reduce or lift when it's safe to do so. For those people who do remain in their homes, you've been warned by the Summit County Sheriff's Office that there are fire retardant drops in the area that is very toxic material to humans, so be very careful and do your best to stay away from that. Gusty winds are definitely concerned about that as we see the weather shift tomorrow, hoping for a bunch of rain out of that. At the same time, that rain brings bare slopes and could be some concerns of some landslides there. We're estimating, I believe, about 5,000 homes. That could change as we see a more accurate assessment over the days to come. Anything you wanted to add to that, Renee?
No, just that we're hoping to hear more about the terrain and how close it's getting to any of those structures in Summit Park and the evacuation orders and any change in the timeline there. She mentioned that the evacuation order information will come from Summit County Sheriff's Office first. So we'll make sure we pass along any information, but they're still saying, you know, at earliest tomorrow morning. Boy, would it be nice for those people to get back in their homes today. We'll keep you posted.
And again, I guess good news for those in Summit Park, power will be restored, they hope, soon. They've got Rocky Mountain Power crews on site now fixing those power lines. Well, given these circumstances, we're going to continue to provide you news coverage throughout the day and have postponed the start of our annual summer pledge drive. As this is an ever-changing situation, we're really not certain what the remainder of the week holds, but we're hopeful that we'll be able to proceed with the pledge drive as soon as tomorrow or perhaps later in the week.
Leslie, it's been so encouraging to get notes from our listeners, excuse me, thanking us for the coverage. And we've also seen starting this weekend when we started doing our regular updates on this fire, people making some donations through our website, kpcw.org. And it means the world to us to get those notes and to get those donations. So thank you, everyone.
Okay, we're going to end the hour with some local news. In a news conference Friday, Intermountain Healthcare announced that Utah's ICUs are over capacity due to the COVID-19 Delta strain. 90% of those patients are unvaccinated. KPCW's Carolyn Murray reports on the public plea that healthcare workers are making to get the vaccine, mask up, wash your hands, and please avoid large crowds.
Intermountain Healthcare infectious disease expert Dr. Eddie Stenahem said ICUs throughout the state are at 102%. He said providers are worried that trauma patients arriving at hospitals for emergency care will be negatively affected because the critically ill COVID patients compete for those resources. Summer activities typically generate traumatic accidents that put a strain on emergency hospital services. Stenahem said he can't believe the medical environment is in this dire situation again.
So we're full, completely full. This is not a place that we want to be. 100% capacity is not where you want to run a hospital. That means that all the beds are full in the ICU. So when you get a trauma patient, when you get a MI patient, a heart attack patient, a stroke patient that needs an ICU bed, you got to figure something out. You have to figure out who can move from the ICU to the floor, who doesn't need to be there, and how do we get that patient up into the unit. So it is a position that is really taxing and stressful on our caregivers, both on the ICU and also the med-surg side, because what ends up happening is that you're taking care of sicker patients than you really should be on a general medical floor or surgical floor.
Stenahan said hospitals might delay elective surgeries as the upward trend continues. He said health providers are working more shifts without breaks, and it's wearing them down. He said he's never seen morale so low.
You know, our hospitalists, our ICU doctors, and man, our nurses have taken such an emotional toll on this. And now seeing patients come in the hospital that are suffering where they didn't need to be. You know, the majority of patients that are coming into the hospital with active COVID-19 are not vaccinated, and they could have been vaccinated. And if they were vaccinated, the vast majority of these hospitalizations would have been avoided. And so seeing that so acutely of a preventable episode of suffering is just so wearing on our caregivers that, yeah, I worry about them in terms of what it's going to look like. And we're kind of staring down the barrel of a potentially really bad fall and winter without a whole lot of relief unless something changes.
Stenahan said Pfizer and Moderna vaccine data show they protect against the Delta variant. There isn't data showing if natural immunity, those who have already had COVID, carries the same protections.
And the recommendation right now is if you've previously been infected with COVID, get vaccinated because we know that vaccination is going to protect you against Delta. We don't know that natural infection is going to protect you against Delta, and the vaccine is safe and it's effective. And so get vaccinated.
Stenahan said they're seeing younger people sickened by the Delta variant. They know it is more transmissible and that the symptoms are more severe. They don't know yet if the Delta variant specifically targets younger ages.
More and more people are vaccinated as the age goes up. And so you've got a much more protected older population. So think of those people as non-susceptible. And so where is that virus going to find susceptible hosts? It's that younger population. So I think it's probably layered in the fact that we've got variable vaccination uptake based on age. You've got a new variant that may have new characteristics to it. I think all of that leads us to kind of the situation we're in.
Stenahan said vaccinations, masking, hand washing, and social distancing are essential as the winter season approaches. You can find information about COVID vaccinations on kpcw.org. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, the Summit County Council last week did not come to a vote on the Dakota Pacific plan proposed for Kimball Junction. Summit County Council member Chris Robinson says the council will probably make a decision the next time Dakota is on the agenda, but he doesn't know when that will occur. KPCW's Rick Bruff has more.
The council on August 11th looked at the proposal for Dakota Pacific, which is more precisely an amendment of the approval given to the Boyer-Tett Park in 2008. The decision was possible, but council members said they needed to look further into details, such as the affordable housing. The proposed development consists of over 1.7 million square feet of commercial and residential space extending west of the Kimball Transit Center. Robinson said the plan includes two major financing mechanisms. One is a public infrastructure district, PID for short, that would assess properties within the Dakota plan.
And within that, they would voluntarily tax them their properties to raise $14 million that would go to the county for infrastructure improvements, a similar structure that we used with Canyons Village.
Second is the Community Reinvestment Act, the form of the redevelopment agency financing tool that's been used in Utah for decades. The Dakota developers would be involved there also.
That would take the tax increment and of the whole Kimball Junction neighborhood, and they would cooperate in that, and they would receive 10% of the net proceeds to help with their infrastructure needs. The county would use that, and together with the $14 million to leverage as a carrot to entice UDOT to advance their Alternative 3 on their 224 alternatives analysis, which is to basically fix Kimball Junction with lower 224 down so that Ute Boulevard and Olympic Parkway can cross over at grade and basically unite the two sides of Kimball Junction.
The project's 1,100 residential units would include 336 units of workforce housing. Robinson said they need to study if the project can use a so-called waterfall provision, which would give preference to occupants who live and work in Summit County. Councilmember Roger Armstrong said he's long been concerned that if the workforce units don't have feasible deed restrictions to accommodate locals, there's no point in considering Dakota Pacific. The project, he predicted, would result in adding about 3,000 new people to the basin.
I think that continuing to do this kind of development where we solve affordable housing by adding nearly three times the amount of the affordable housing with market rate housing is starting to approach insanity. I just don't think it gets us where we want. It supersizes growth and doesn't address the problem. And for each one of those houses that we add, we need more workers for maintenance and all the other things that goes into that. We'll need more sheriff's deputies. We'll need more firefighters. We'll need more things to support those additional bodies. And I think that's wrong-headed.
Council Chairman Glenn Wright said no project will be perfect, but it's incredibly important to increase affordable housing.
Are we going to get some people who, in the future may decide they'd rather work down on the Wasatch Front? Probably so. But if we don't make major strides towards improving the volume of affordable housing in the community, we are destined to become nothing but a community for rich millionaires in sprawl housing. And this is the kind of development that can change that perspective for us.
You too can be Aspen.
Yes.
That last comment from Councilmember Doug Clyde. For KPCW, I'm Rhett Broff.